You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we want to make America masturbate again. It's going to be huge. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How many times has someone said, "Damn, Daniel," to you over the last week?
More than I could possibly count, and that number is 2.
Wow, that's it? So. That's how you can tell we're in an older demographic now.
Yes, one was an internet friend. I guess it was last week, the guy we mentioned, Michael, out of Chicago. I think it was him, now that I remember it. And the other was a guy at work who thought it was hilarious. Who is obsessed with this meme, this damn Daniel meme? Is this the same people who made Alex from Target popular?
Yeah, you mean teenage girls who have nothing better to do?
And lesbians with TV shows?
Look, the damn Daniel thing is literally the annoying kid who made fun of you for no reason in high school, and you're like, "Why are you making fun of me?" made a video and posted it on the internet. Like, he literally is saying "damn Daniel" because the guy has style every day.
I think people are obsessed with this because they secretly want to molest the kid.
It's possible.
And that, women, is something. You're objectifying men, and we don't have to put up with it anymore.
It's not even men. You're objectifying a boy. That's pedophilia. If men did this, yeah. Imagine this was a meme of a damn Daniela back at it again with the white pumps. Like, can you imagine?
Well, yeah. I could imagine, because I think it happens all the time on the internet. But
I don't know what sites you go to. But
yeah, I just... People think this guy's cute, just like they thought the Alex from Target guy is cute, and for whatever reason when women do it, it's adorable, it's a meme. When men do it, we're fucking pedophiles. So, you know, double standard.
That's true.
I hate this entire conversation so far.
All right, well, let's move on then and talk about who's also joining us via Skype. From the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. Elliot, you were just telling us about your new job you started pre-show. You were telling us about it.
Yes, it's I'm a vacation planner for a certain vacation company, and I'm really enjoying it because it's a different challenge than what Disney was. It's a lot more mental, not just physical, and I'm really liking it because I'm learning a lot about different locations, different places and destinations. It's really fun. But the thing is that for a vacation planner, this is our peak season, and I'm used to this being our slow season, because at Disney, like, the parks are almost empty usually at this time of year. So it's taken some getting used to. I literally just barged in here, like, 2 minutes ago, maybe 3 minutes ago, to sit down and record. So
it's not easier for you, because it sounds like you lost your job, and then we're like, what gayer job could I get? Ooh, travel agent.
Well, I mean, surprisingly, it is fairly gay, but it's not so gay.
Why is it surprising? Why is it surprising?
It's not so gay that it's off-putting, but it's gay enough where, you know, like, I'll hum a show tune and people will know it, you know?
Nice. Funny enough, the only other guy I know who works at a travel agency is gay.
Yeah, no kidding. Who also I associate with Disneyland. Because he got you into Disneyland for free.
Yeah.
Coincidence?
Mm-hmm. I think not. We've uncoupled the gay travel agency conspiracy.
Well, we're going to uncouple other conspiracies here in the news, because we're going to talk about millennials and Donald Trump, and, you know, maybe those two stories have something to do with each other. Let's find out in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Just a fad, 'cause kid, there's consequences to what we say and what
First up in the huge news, no, not Donald Trump, millennials and cereal. Yes, this is a big controversy this week as the New York Times, Washington Post, and basically every other major newspaper in the country wrote about why millennials aren't eating cereal anymore. Apparently, it's big news. There's something interesting in this article, first of all, that cereal consumption has dropped 30% over the past 15 years, and the future remains uncertain. In order to figure out why this is, cereal manufacturers put a huge poll into the field and discovered that almost 40% of the millennials surveyed for its 2015 report said cereal was an, quote, inconvenient breakfast choice because they had to clean up after eating it.
Oh, I thought it was because they took the little toys out of the boxes. They don't give good toys anymore, do they?
No, although FISA just bought cereal and she opens it up and got a Batman versus Superman comic.
What?
So.
What cereal is this? I will go to the store right now. We are pausing this recording.
I don't know. I'll have to go look, but we will report this. If you're on Twitter at the Midside, we will report which cereal it is.
Well, this is not Special fucking K. It's the fucking worst cereal ever.
I think calling it Special K is offensive. It's differently abled K. Okay? There's nothing. Anyway, so here's the thing. A large contingent of millennials are uninterested in breakfast cereal because eating it means using a bowl, and bowls don't clean themselves. So, they've stopped eating cereal. They've started going to Taco Bell in the morning, eating breakfast sandwiches or eating yogurt or things that you could eat and then immediately throw away. What does this say about our culture? Are we all doomed? Go.
Well, I have to, unfortunately, defend millennials a little bit here, because I identify with the whole eating fast food because it's convenient thing. Recently, I've started a kick where I haven't had very much fast food. I've eaten fast food like 3 or 4 times since the middle of December, because I was doing exactly what you just said, for the convenience factor, because I didn't want to clean up, I didn't want to cook. I would just, you know, go get a $2 meal at McDonald's, and you know, it would fill me up for a little bit, and then I would just keep doing that and, you know, wash and repeat type deal. And, you know, since I've started this new kick, I've tried to, you know, eat breakfast, which involves me getting up and making the simplest breakfast ever I've started with, which is scrambled eggs and bacon. But every time I set my alarm to get up a little earlier, I don't fucking do it because I don't want to put in the effort to make the scrambled eggs and bacon. And then I also, even if I do make them, I don't wash the dishes after. I just leave them in the sink. Which completely goes against, like, the way I like to live. But I'm just too fucking lazy to do it, because I just want to get up in the morning and go.
I have sympathies to this. I have sort of found at least a way to circumvent it a little bit, which is that on Sunday afternoons, Fize and I just cook a lot of meals for the week, or a lot of things that can be refrigerated. So, like, one thing I've done is you get a muffin pan, yes. And then you crack an egg into each muffin slot and scramble it in there with whatever you want, little bits of bacon or some green peppers. Then you bake that and you basically have egg muffins, and I just throw them in a bag, and then in the mornings I microwave a couple. And that's insanely convenient.
You're holding out on me.
There are many things in my life that I do that I don't report to you.
This would make my life so much better. I do meal prep as well, because I'm like, I want to fucking get everything done at the beginning of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, I've discovered this. It's a lot of fun. It's pretty easy. And then we cook other meals on Sunday, easy things I can reheat, like chicken and
just
pork
so you know,
chops.
The name Egg McMuffin is taken.
I didn't say Mick. I'm not a racist. No. The thing about this article, though, is that they try to make a point here that it's not necessarily laziness that's driving people to do this. Almost 2/3 of households, this article says, are supported by 2 working parents today, which is the highest reading on record. The less time families had to prepare food or sit down at restaurants, the more convenience hovers over decisions about food, especially when there's an option to make it easier. So less than 60% of dinners served at home were actually cooked at home last year. So 40%, a little over 40% were not cooked at home. And 30 years ago, that average was closer to 75%. So we've dropped about 15.
I think it's a good thing, and I'll tell you why. The whole of innovation is about creating more time by using less on other things, on the more mundane, the more menial. Cooking food, as wonderful as it can be sometimes, believe me, I am a hell of a cook. I don't want to do it every day. I think anything that gives people more time to do other things is a good thing. So if people are eating more fast food so they can throw it away and not do the dishes, I don't have a problem with that. Not really. As long as you're not going broke doing it.
Here's my one counterpoint. I don't disagree with what Elliot said, but I'd like to add a counterpoint for your consideration, dear audience, which is that I would argue that there is a certain virtue in preparing more of your food. And I'm not saying exclusively you have to cook at home. I enjoy going out to restaurants. I enjoy eating very good food prepared by other people. But there is a virtue in mixing your labor with the food that you consume. It makes you more attached to that food. You know exactly what's in it. You know exactly what you're consuming. You have prepared it. Your work has gone into it. And I think thus you should at least consciously think about appreciating it more.
You know how else you could know what's in your food? If you use Blue Apron. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. If you
oh my god,
do I explain that?
Wouldn't it be great if we had? Wouldn't it be great if we had fucking sponsors though? Oh, that'd be so awesome.
That was a great transition, right?
It would be. We're preparing. Blue Apron, please give us money.
But no,
we will shill for you.
I agree. I agree with Daniel's very Marxist point about, you know, labor, value, and everything.
Come on! It's totally a Lockean point.
And I agree with Elliot's point as well, but I have a response to Elliot's point. Didn't we already figure out the innovation to this problem you're talking about? And wasn't it called slavery?
Yes. Welcome to the Midsite, everyone, where we advocate bringing back slavery. We are essentially the 18% of Donald Trump's order recently surveyed.
And slavery in one breath.
I'll give you that transition in a second. I'm not seriously advocating slavery. My point is just that, you know, this is why you pay other people to make it for you, right? And that's why more people are going to restaurants.
Yes. There's value. Indeed.
And saving the time.
There is. So millennials aren't wholly stupid here, although if you think cereal is inconvenient because you have to clean a bowl, then, you know, go fuck yourselves. So one other thing about this has to do with our cleanliness nonsense in our culture, which is everything has to be spick and span sanitized every time we use it. You know how you clean a bowl with cereal in it? You dump the milk out and you run water on it for 1 second
and then turn it over and it is
clean. You don't have to put it in the dishwasher. It's perfectly fine. You don't need to fucking sanitize everything. It's ridiculous. But you know who's not sanitized? Donald Trump. That man is dirty. Which is why Republicans and Democrats alike are having a real difficult time figuring out what the hell he's all about. Donald Trump is in the news every week, but he's in the news for us particularly today because tomorrow, at least when we're recording this, and maybe today when you're listening to it, is Super Tuesday, which is
not
a day when
many... Not the Batman versus Superman.
No, that's Super Awesome Tuesday. No, this is the day when many states will have their primary votes, and we will find out who is most likely going to be the nominee for both parties. Obviously, that's almost likely going to be Hillary Clinton for the Democrats without a miracle for Bernie Sanders in the South. And unfortunately for most, it's going to be Donald Trump for the Republicans, because after Super Tuesday, it's winner take all, baby. So if Donald Trump wins by one vote or 10,000 votes, it don't matter. He get all the delegates. That's right. So Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal had an interesting article about Trump supporters, who they are, who this whole thing is, and we thought it was an interesting dichotomy that she was setting up. Basically, she sets up something that she calls the protected class and the unprotected class. The protected class have everything going for them, jobs, housing, schools, etc. They've not only got it, they have rigged the system so that it keeps giving it to them. As a result, they are blind to the plight of the unprotected class. The unprotected class get the short end of the stick. Lousy jobs, housing in bad neighborhoods, schools that don't function, and their situation keeps getting worse. Is it any wonder that the unprotected flock to candidates like Donald Trump or even Bernie Sanders? who offer unrealistically to stick it to the system. Quote, the protected make public policy, the unprotected live in it. The unprotected are starting to push back powerfully. So.
Stupid. First of all, I know you have thoughts on this, but let me just say this. When you talk about protected and unprotected, you need to ask the question, who's doing the protecting? What are you talking about? Who is being protected and by what? That's the first thing. And secondly, I cannot believe that this came from Peggy Noonan, of all people. Like, this is a woman who should know better. If your circumstances are your own fault, you talk about people with, oh, they have jobs and they have houses and, oh, life's going well. Maybe because they freaking worked for it. Because they earned it. That's not protection. In fact, to get that sort of thing, you have to get out of your comfort zone and actually earn it. For most people, that is a very gutsy, brave thing to do. It has nothing to do with being protected or unprotected. It has to do with having the courage to go after what you want. And if you don't have the courage to do it, fine, but don't seek to take from the people who do.
You sound like a one percenter there, Elliot. I don't know. I'm not sure I can trust you. So, yeah, but I tend to agree. Peggy Noonan, who is a famous conservative columnist with the Wall Street Journal and a conservative pundit for a very long time, has gone off her rocker. I mean, if there's any grain of truth to what she said, it has nothing to do with protected and unprotected. It has to essentially do with governmental power versus non-governmental power, meaning people who are wielding the full force of the government to make themselves rich, make themselves protected, I guess, to use her terminology, and the people who are suffering from that. But these are not classes of people in the traditional economic sense. These are classes of people who have been artificially created by the wielding of government. Now, this is where I partially agree with Peggy Noonan, which is that the people who are voting for Donald Trump are disaffected conservatives and Democrats who have essentially looked to their candidates for over the past 20 years and said, Ed, what are you going to do for us? And their candidates said, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to destroy these people, I'm going to do this, and their candidates have done nothing for them. Nothing for them. They've capitulated. They've allowed government to grow. They've allowed horrible laws to be passed. And the people, in this instance, are fucking fed up with it. And they have decided that there is no way to stop the government from doing shit. So let's just have a guy who's on our side doing shit. And I think that is the average Donald Trump voter, the Republican who has seen conservatives capitulate on every issue for the past 20 years. And said, you know what? Fuck it. Conservatives aren't going to do anything for me. So I just want a guy who's going to wield the government club in my favor for once. Right. Enter Mussolini Trump.
Right. And that's where I was going to push back against you guys for that is, you know, maybe her dichotomy is a little rough and maybe her terminology is a bit rough. But isn't there something very Randian about what she's saying? She's pushing back against corporatism, against a class of people who have put themselves in power not because of what they've earned and what they've produced, but because of the, you know, the deals they've made in the bar that's on the roof but looks like it's in the basement type deal.
It's only Randian if John Galt and Dagny Taggart threw their support behind Wesley Mouch. That's basically what Donald Trump is. He is Wesley Mouch with a little bit of orange tossed in there.
I'm not defending Donald Trump. I agree with you on that point. I'm just talking about what she's identifying. It seems like she's grasping at complaining about corporatism and complaining about the world that Ayn Rand predicted in Atlas Shrugged.
I see your point there. I would say that it's not good to dismiss her terminology. Like the specific ideas here matter in a very real way, because otherwise she is just giving credence to the left's entire infrastructure of ideas, that there are people who can't get ahead in life no matter what they do, and the system is rigged against them. I just don't think that that kind of rhetoric is helpful for people, because even in the current system that we have, which is bad, don't get me wrong, hard work, going after what you want in life, taking risks can be successful. You do have the ability to improve your lot in life. Not that it's guaranteed to you, but the way that Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton talk about it, no matter what you fucking do, no matter how much work you put in, some rich guy's going to step his boot on your throat, and you are just going to be down for the count, and you need me the Democrat to put a gun to his head so that he takes his boot off your throat. And I don't like adding to that rhetoric. So yes, I think you're right that Peggy identifies something here, but the way she does it deserves reproach, in my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah. So people are voting for Donald Trump because they want the big club of government on their side for once. Personally, I think it is too late. I think it is too late to stop Trump. The Republican Party has capitulated with him for too long. Imagine that, Republicans capitulating. And they are basically fucked at this point. The electoral math shows that he is going to win the nomination. And at best at this point, they are hoping for a brokered convention where all the delegates can tie on the first vote and then all jump ship and vote for Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz or someone else.
So they're playing Survivor right now? It really sounds like they're trying to split the vote in Survivor to get rid of the hidden immunity idol and then really vote out who they want on the second revote.
That is an incredibly nerdy analogy, and I think I understand it, and yes, that is exactly what they're doing. Yes. Marco Rubio may be the Republican nominee without winning a single state.
Yeah, that's Survivor level stuff right there.
Yeah, after the first vote or after the second vote, the delegates can vote for whoever they want. And so I think many of them, yeah, go ahead, Elliot.
Sorry, all I'm going to say is I can get you some really sweet package deals for Punta Cana in Dominican Republic. I'm just saying.
Emphasis on package.
Package deal sounds like another gay thing.
Oh, it's total.
No wonder Ayn Rand hated package deals.
I get some deals on something to get the hell out.
I was thinking today, this wasn't necessarily part of this article or part of what we thought we were going to talk about. I was thinking today, is there a way that could affect Donald Trump voters? Because Donald Trump voters seem pretty immune to rational argument.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there was a way to affect them. The only thing that I came up with, and you two can give me your feedback about whether or not you think this would work, is to really concretize things, make it very specific and down to earth for Donald Trump voters. You know, something to the effect of like, Donald Trump, this is the man who will be the commander in chief of the most powerful military in the world. Donald Trump will have the ability to send your sons and daughters to die for causes that maybe only Donald Trump believes in his messed up head. Donald Trump will be in charge of the biggest economy in the world and be in the room with serious world leaders talking to them. Is this the person you seriously want to be speaking to the leaders of Great Britain, Japan, Australia, Canada, etc.? Really? What do you think of that?
I have two responses to that.
One,
I don't think that would work because these are the people that made Honey Boo Boo and Duck Dynasty popular.
Yeah.
And two, that argument almost convinces me because I'm just like, fuck it. Some people just want to watch the world burn. I think that's the point I'm at. And you just made a very compelling case for watching everything crash and burn horrifically. So you almost swayed me to vote for Donald Trump there.
Come on, the pathetic point about your sons and daughters being sent to die for causes only Donald Trump believes in.
I have no family and nobody loves me, so I don't care.
All right, vote Trump.
Justin, we're voting you out of the mid-side. Daniel, you're now the new host.
God, like I'd want that gig. The pay is shit.
Well, it is shit. You lose money, actually. You have to pay to do it. But except for our wonderful Patreon supporters, thank you very much.
Yes. We love you.
But seriously, though, let me just say this. What this has shown is that Republicans and really a lot of the base of the Republican Party, they were never as faithful to the idea and the concept of liberty as we've always believed them to be. They've always package-dealed it with something else. I don't know if package-deal is a verb, but whatever. They've always combined it with other things, with restrictionism, with nativism, some form of racism. And you know we hate discussions of racism here in the mid-side unless they're legitimate. And I have to wonder that maybe there is some legitimate racism going on nowadays. But the point is, we've I mean, I don't think that there's ever, the Republicans have never really been the pro-liberty party that they have always professed to be. And what did Ayn Rand say? That in a battle of ideas, no matter how bad the idea is, the one that is the most intellectually consistent, that's the one that's going to win. Those are the people who are going to win. For all the flaws of Bernie Sanders, for his, as horrible as he is, as evil as his philosophy is, and as his politics is, or are, sorry, he does and lives by that code. He flees, people like that. They like that he flies coach. They like the fact that he embraced Black Lives Matters. The fact that he was arrested being a revolutionary in the 60s. They like that. They like someone who is going to stick to what he professes to believe. Who do we have on the right that does that? That has a chance at the presidency? Nobody.
Well, to be
yeah,
fair,
yeah, the Republican Party has been
Hillary on the
pretty
left
vapid.
As well.
Yeah, it's, I mean, electorally speaking, Bernie may be close in the national polls, but it's just mathematically he's going to get decimated in the South, which is Super Tuesday, and that's going to sway a lot of people, and it's going to be a done deal for Bernie, I think, after today when you're listening to this. Yeah, or Wednesday, essentially.
And that's my broader point, is we can sit here, right, and I think, you know, this is the left's strategy, right? I think the left, the media, is already prepping for the general campaign. And they're prepping for the general campaign to make Hillary Clinton the under-the-radar candidate. And what I mean by that is, Hillary Clinton is a bad candidate. Not just because of her ideas, but just because she's fucking unmarketable. There's just so many reasons she's unmarketable. And the only way they can do that is just say, you think our person's crazy? No, this person's crazier. And you don't say our person's crazy, you just say this person's so crazy, anybody is better. Oh, our person falls under the category of anybody. Aren't we going to end up with Hillary as president?
Yes. Well, we are with a Trump nomination, I think. If I was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, by the way, my entire philosophy would be, Hillary, go home. Go home. Have a Mai Tai. Turn the election on the TV. Do not speak to anyone. Do not go outside your house. The more you speak, the more people hate you, refuse to debate, refuse to do interviews, and you will be elected the next president of the United States. Also, spend no money on ads.
And that's the thing is, the point I want to make about this is, that's not an improvement over Donald Trump. She's just as batshit as Donald Trump, just on the other side.
Yep.
I mean, South Park makes the joke that it's always between a giant douche and a turd sandwich, but, I mean, this is like, mega douche versus mega turd sandwich. These might be the worst candidates ever. I'm not saying that to be over the top. I'm being serious.
I would have to do some historical digging to see, but this got to be in the top three at least worst.
Right after Franklin Pierce.
Who's the guy who died in office after 9 days?
No, Zachary? That's William Henry Harrison. Died after 10 days.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Speaking of racism, Mark Zuckerberg. Ah, I see you didn't see that coming. In a private memo posted on the Facebook company announcement page for employees only, Mark Zuckerberg acknowledged that employees have been scratching out Black Lives Matter and writing, what? Not hang all of them, but no, all lives matter. On the company's famous signature wall. The company staff, who is only 2% black, is facing the issue head on. Quote, we've never had rules about what people can write on our wall, said Zuckerberg. We expect everybody to treat each other with respect. Did anyone catch that last sentence? We expect everybody to treat each other with respect unless you believe that all lives matter. So the Zuckerberg post goes on, but he's essentially a douche, and I don't want to read any more of it.
I just think it's funny there's an actual wall they write on at Facebook headquarters.
Yes.
Is there an actual bird that flies around Twitter?
Cute joke. Actually, it is ironic that their actual wall at Facebook facilitates more social interaction than the digital wall that they push out to everyone else.
Well, it has the same censorship problems, though, doesn't it?
Apparently. I just find it funny to think that if Facebook literally put up walls, in different neighborhoods that people could write on. It would increase social interaction. But anyway, yeah, there's not really much more to say about this particular story, except that, I mean, Facebook's obviously a private company. They can do whatever the hell they want. If Mark Zuckerberg wants to be a social justice-y wuss, fine. But this is being reflected more and more in Facebook's policy against quote unquote hate speech or speech that violates their community guidelines. And this is just a surefire way to get people to stop using your service. You're already seeing this with Twitter. Twitter is, unverifying lots of famous conservatives for quote hate speech. And so a huge proportion of people are just leaving Twitter, just saying, fuck it. We don't need Twitter. We've got we've got a number of other things, and Twitter already has a growth problem. So, you know, if it's only 5% of their user base, that's still a huge blow from Twitter's point of view. So Mark, Big Z, you should probably rethink some of your thoughts about these things and stop being such a douche. Anything else, gentlemen?
No, I just read a little bit about this, and I don't know if we've covered this before. Tell me if we have, but I was reading about why people say Black Lives Matter is legitimate and All Lives Matter does not cover Black Lives Matter. Have you read that argument before?
Yeah, I've read it already. I don't find it compelling whatsoever.
Yeah, neither do I.
I mean, isn't the basics of it that we're pointing out the class that's been underprivileged? So if you link them and you put them into All Lives Matter, you're continuing to oppress them. Is that the basic argument?
Right. Except that the argument fails on so many levels that it's not even funny. One, because they're putting it in, it's a package deal here, because they say that, but then when they use it, it's in the context of white people are oppressing us. But if you actually believed that Black Lives Matter, you would be focusing on a ton of the inner city violence. Again, black on black crime is an order of magnitude higher than white on black crime. And according to police crimes, police are killing everyone. Police kill everyone. This is a big Adam Carolla point. Police shot up a truck with two elderly Hispanic women 200 plus times because they mistook them for a large African-American man.
Oh, I thought they just mistook them for Ron Rivera and they were mad about how he coached in the Super Bowl.
Mexican grandma. Yes. Ron Rivera. Mi abuelo. No. Look, I like the police. I'm not here to demonize police officers.
Fuck
not,
the police.
Not one of my pet issues. But at the same time, we put police officers through a certain set of training. And essentially, police officers are like great white sharks. Once they smell the blood, once they hit the feeding frenzy, it's on, motherfucker. And it's not getting turned off until you are shredded to little tiny bits.
Well, don't forget, there's also a height max, or not height, I'm sorry. There's also an intelligence maximum to be a cop. Remember, we've covered that before here in the Midside.
Yes, you're not allowed to be too smart if you want to be a cop. Absolutely. Right. That's not to say that cops are necessarily dumb, just you can't be a genius.
We need to repost that article, by the way. We need to put it on the Midside, just because I've referenced it maybe 3 times in the last 3 weeks, and yeah. I cannot remember for the life of me where we found it. So we got to track it down again.
All right, you get on that, Elliot.
I'll get on that. As I tell
you know
them,
what?
Max Zapata.
Now Justin is making Adam Carolla references, and I don't know what to do with myself.
Well, you got me. I listen to it at the gym all the time now. It's ridiculous.
I fucking love Adam Carolla. I love it. Do you know who else I love? Cheryl Teagues. That's right. Former Sports Illustrated model, who many of you probably don't know. She has slammed the new cover of Sports Illustrated, which featured plus-size model Ashley Graham. Cheryl Teagues said that of Graham's size, I don't think it's healthy, which is apparently controversial. She continued, her face is beautiful, beautiful, but I don't think it's healthy in the long run. I don't like it that when we're talking about full-figured women because we're glamorizing them, and your waist should be smaller than 35 inches. That's what Dr. Oz said, and I'm sticking to it.
Ridiculous at Oz.
Yes. Dr. Oz said it must be true. So here's to be really specific about what's going on. The Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition featured a bigger woman on the cover.
Bigger, and I want to point out, she's 5'9", 200 pounds.
Yes. So it's not like she's, you know, 6'8", 200 pounds. She's 5'9".
Right. It's not like she's Nicki Minaj, where she's tiny and just happens to have, like, breast and ass implants.
Correct. She is all around pretty darn big. Pretty darn big. That being said, I mean, so here, a couple things about this. One, the social justice warriors have already jumped on this as a major victory, redefining beauty standards, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, you will never redefine beauty standards, ever. Guys will always continue to fuck what they think is beautiful, no matter what you say about it.
Let's make beauty not beautiful.
You think you put a fat chick on the cover of a magazine and guys are like, oh, well, I guess I'll do fat chicks now. Like, no. Some guys like big girls, some guys like petite girls. Guys are going to like what they like. Period. End of story. In fact, some guys, never mind. We won't go there. So Graham told People Magazine.
Some guys like ending the story during the period? Is that what you were going to say?
I was going to make some joke about that, and I thought,
All right, leave that one there for me.
Oh, jump all over that period. So Graham told People Magazine after a cover reveal, I thought Sports Illustrated was taking a risk by putting a girl my size in the pages, but putting me on the cover, they aren't just breaking barriers. They are the standard now. This is beyond epic. What say you, Justin, even though I know what you will say?
Fuck you, Ashley Graham, and not in a good way. No, this is, I mean, it's, you've already alluded to it, and I already alluded to it too when I said we're going to make beauty not beautiful. Like, this is like putting somebody who can't play football on the football field and being like, we're redefining football standards. Like, the point of a model is they're supposed to be the elite. And I'm not saying, you know,
it's in the word! Model!
Good point. I couldn't have said it better. Right. So not everybody's supposed to be like them. I mean, do I fucking sit around and feel sorry for myself because I'm not as good-looking and fit as Tom Brady and good at football as Tom Brady? Like, I can't aspire to be Tom Brady because he's fucking one in ever, probably. And you could even argue he's smarter than I am, too, with the way his brain works. So I don't feel bad about myself. I mean, the one argument that's upset me the most about this, you see the social justice warriors making, is I've never seen me represented with models. I've never seen me represented in the swimsuit edition. Okay? Maybe that's because you're not as fucking pretty as a model. Maybe that's why you're not represented. Come to terms with it. I've never seen me represented in the NBA. And you know what? There were short people. There was Spud Webb. There was Muggsy Bogues. Muggsy Bogues was so short and such a freak, they fucking put him in Space Jam where the aliens took him over. That's how much of a freak he was, that he was in that movie. And that's the thing about Ashley Graham, right? She is an outlier. And what I mean by that is, her, as Cheryl Teague said, she has a beautiful face. You look at that face and it's beautiful, so it distracts you from the rest of it. Anyone who's been on the internet know that's the fat chick's number one strategy. Oh, I'll take pictures that hide my fatness with all the angles and make people see my face with lots of makeup on it. That's what every fat chick does on the internet. And Ashley Graham has the fat chick face that every fat chick wants. And you know what? More power to her. But that makes her an outlier. That doesn't mean that suddenly all fat chicks are attractive. It just means that, wow, she has a pretty enough face that Sports Illustrated can airbrush her enough and put her at an angle. Because if you look at the angle of that cover, they're not letting you look at anything. And put her at an angle that she seems attractive.
Yeah. And there's equivocation here, right, that I think is very important that we make very explicit. There is a difference between someone who carries some extra pounds on you because of booty, boobs, thighs, whatever it is, and someone who is overweight, someone who is unhealthy, overweight. There is a difference there. And I mean, I think many guys would say that they want someone who has a little extra, someone who's a little meatier, someone who's not a stick figure. That's probably the bell curve. But that is very different from being obese. That is very different from being 5'9 and 200 pounds.
The bell curve is racist, Daniel.
Thank you. Good, love a good Charles Murray joke. Nothing gets me off more than a good Charles Murray joke.
Well, it certainly gets me off more than actually Graham.
But imagine a men's fitness magazine with like fucking DJ Qualls on the cover. Anyone? DJ Qualls? Road Trip?
Yeah, Road Trip. Z Nation? Yeah, I know who DJ Qualls is.
Okay, good. Imagine DJ Qualls on the cover of Men's Fitness, redefining what it means to be fit, redefining what it means to be bulk, redefining what a chiseled man looks like. It's retarded, right? Everyone would look at that and go, that's stupid. Yet we look at this and we go, oh, how brave. How brave is it for SI to put a fat woman on the cover? It's not brave. It's dumb. Who is excited about this? Who's rushing out to buy this SI magazine?
Fat chicks.
Feminists?
Fat chicks.
Whatever. Again, thick women, gorgeous. Fat women, not so much. Thick men can be attractive, you know, but if you're overweight, and I've dealt with this my entire life, it's not attractive. Get it together. Get it together, Daniel. Damn, Daniel.
I came around.
Yeah.
No, this goes back to the discussion we had at Curvy.
Yeah.
Curvy women are attractive. Right, exactly.
I'll tell you this, though. Women may have the pretty face to hide the big body. Guys, and I've learned this recently, we get to use the beard. The power of a beard is so amazing. I am not kidding you. Today, I got somebody's phone number today. Some dude gave me his phone number. I'm not
Very
even
nice.
Kidding. The power of the beard to hide everything
you
else.
You know, some of us can't grow a beard, and that is very unfair to us.
I'm sorry. I triggered you.
And offensive, okay?
I triggered you. I am so sorry. And not in a good way.
I am, what is it? Hair, I'm follically challenged, okay?
Different follically abled?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, God. I hate everything.
Well, then let's talk about some things we hate a little bit more. It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Kick things off with a couple of reviews here, a couple of sitcom reviews. I want to talk about the season finale of Superstore, and then I want to talk about the premiere episode of Fuller House. Did either of you watch either of these shows?
No.
I didn't watch the season finale of Superstore. I've watched other episodes of Superstore and then had to stop because it was terrible.
Okay, well, I think there were some good things about Superstore. I liked America Ferrera. I liked Ben Feldman. I liked the black guy in the wheelchair. I thought they were all very funny. There were things
racist.
Yeah, exactly. There were things I enjoyed about it. But of course, this is a show based upon Walmart. So what did they have to do? Make the last episode about how they don't fucking allow unions in Walmart. And, you know, I'm not faulting the plotting of the show, and I'm not faulting the integration of the show. It was based upon the teenage girl character who was pregnant, had her baby in the store, and they weren't going to give her pregnancy time off, maternity leave, so they tried to have a union and everything. So it was integrated in that way, and it was well-designed. And then the payoff to the whole season was well-designed, the last scene. It's just, when you get to that point where the ideas are so bad, even though the writing's good, it's hard to like it. Because I'm so sick of this trope of anti-Walmart and Walmart needs unions type deal.
Yeah, I don't want to see activism in my TV shows. Like, I don't even want to see conservative activism in my TV shows. Like, I just want you to make good stories.
Agreed.
I don't want an agenda, so. Sorry.
That was terrible. All that, I mean, Chris Rock complaining about racism in Hollywood when he's hosting the damn Oscars. Enough activism. Enough.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I also watched the Netflix season premiere of Fuller House. And this is a show that is run completely off of nostalgia. The first, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes of the episode is literally just introducing the characters for no reason. They all just like walk in the room and they all refer back to things they did in Full House and make, like, cute little references. Like, Kimberly Gibbler comes in for no reason, and everyone's like, why are you here? And then she takes her shoes off for no reason to refer to the fact that when she takes her shoes off, her feet smell really bad. And they just do that throughout the entire opening scene, just putting everyone in there to reference to the fact that everyone's still around, and this is the reunion. And it was just, it was very, very poorly done.
Never watched an episode of Full House in my entire life, happy to say that. So I will not be watching any episodes of Fuller House either.
I will be watching Fuller House as soon as I get the time to, and it will be a Netflix binge. I will binge it.
It's probably the only way to do it, because you're not going to want to go back to it. I literally, after I watched it, I was like, I'll just read the Wikipedia summary, because I want to know what happens.
Look, it can't be worse than Jessica Jones, so I will watch it, and I'm going to enjoy it.
Jessica Jones was better made, that's what I'll say.
We'll quibble on that.
They had one joke where when everyone was being introduced and everything, all the characters, somebody asked where Michelle was, and Danny Tanner said, Bob Saget said, oh, she's in New York running her fashion empire, so she's too busy to join us. And everyone looked at the camera.
Yes!
Really?
Yeah. really bad. God.
I don't even care.
Oh, man.
All right, so let's.
I have an impromptu review of Star Wars because I saw it again in 3D IMAX 70mm laser projection, and my review is fucking awesome.
Was there any doubt?
Although I did notice that there were quite a few continuity errors, because this was the clearest projection I have ever seen in my entire life, and it was on a screen that was 6 stories tall. I've never seen so much detail in a film, and actually watching the 3D IMAX 70mm is a completely different experience from watching any other 3D movie. I typically hate them. This had so much depth to the film that at points it looked like I was watching a stage play, because of how the plane looks on the Z-axis. So I highly recommend that.
Did Kylo Ren look more emo?
His hair looked fucking fabulous. That's what I have to say.
Could you tell it was Daniel Craig in the Stormtrooper uniform?
I did see the pecs. They're bulging through the armor. No, the biggest continuity error, which is very nerdy, is that they used 2 different BB-8 units throughout the shoot, and one had a metal antenna and one had a white plastic antenna. If you were watching that on a regular definition projection screen, you could never fucking see that. But on this insanely high def laser, it was like glaring. It was like a beacon.
I would be pissed.
Man, I'm never going to be unsee it.
Also in the scene where Finn is talking to Poe, getting him out of the Star Destroyer, they keep cutting back between different shots of Finn where he is drenched in sweat on his face, and then where his face is completely dry.
Damn you.
Well, it's in the spirit of Star Wars then, because there were a lot of those continuity things in the original trilogy. But that yes. BB-8 thing, man, like, this is where I'm like Adam Carolla. I know he would get pissed at that too. How many fucking millions of dollars do we have to give to this budget for you to design the fucking robots exactly the same way?
All I could think of was Adam Carolla would just be screaming right now. Funny that we made that connection, but yes.
It's the same exact thing. It's so frustrating.
Yes.
That would piss me off.
Exactly.
Like, if I was J.J. Abrams, I would be so angry. My fucking masterpiece, and they couldn't fucking get that right? Are you kidding me? Never working with the robotics guy or the prop guy again. Whoever fucking made that decision and fucked that up.
Yeah. Because you notice it because in the first scene with BB-8 and Rey, she says, oh, your antenna's bent. And it's very clearly a tiny metal antenna. And then the next shot in the same scene, it's a BB-8 unit with a giant white plastic antenna that clearly could not bend.
So, fair, it's giant and white.
It's true. I actually was staring at Rey's ass most of the time. So,
yeah, Elliot will be staring at the giant white.
I was staring at
a 6-story screen. It is fabulous.
All right, let's move on to some news here. Some news that I think Daniel's going to hate these next 2 things, but I want to get your opinions on it. Sarah Michelle Gellar's career, I think, may have hit a low here. They're going to do a pilot of the movie Cruel Intentions, and she is going to be reprising her role in it.
So, like, when she gets out of jail 30 years after the events of the movie? Like, that is that the deal here?
I'm impressed that you remember that there was a plot to that movie.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, yeah, it's Dangerous Liaisons. That's the story. You never read Dangerous Liaisons? Or remember the story?
No.
Yeah, the two siblings, they make a bet about whether or not the brother can seduce and take the virginity of the young woman, but then the brother falls in love with the young woman, and the sister becomes jealous because they're actually incestuous. You don't remember?
No.
I remember that now that you say that.
It's a messed up movie. For the time especially, it's incredibly messed up. But I just remember Joshua Jackson was played a gay character, and he had a nice bedroom scene with somebody. That was pleasant. And Ryan Phillippe, you could see his bare ass. That was really pleasant.
So are you buying this show then, Elliot?
Probably not. I'm like Daniel, sometimes things just need to end. Let them stay ended, you know? But who knows what they do with it. If it really is an intriguing enough story, then maybe I'll give it a watch. But I'm not really intrigued right now.
How far to the bottom of the barrel can we scrape, Daniel?
I'm not buying or selling. I'm putting in the trash compactor. It's going directly to the fucking dump because I just can't. We just cannot scrape the bottom of the barrel anymore. Please, please stop it.
Just don't get mad about the DuckTales reboot, okay, Daniel?
Woo!
So let me ask you the next thing about unoriginality here. Did you see that while promoting 10 Cloverfield Lane, J.J. Abrams says he already knows what the third Cloverfield movie would be?
Yes. And it would be blatantly hypocritical of me here not to criticize J.J. Abrams. So I love J.J. Abrams, and I will still criticize him. Stop it. Stop it. Please stop it. The first Cloverfield movie was good. It was very interesting. It was unique. It was well done. For as much panning as it gets, it was a perfectly entertaining movie. I sort of quasi get this. It's not even a sequel. It's like a sideways move for Cloverfield. It's new. It's a tight space versus a huge open city. That's an interesting concept. But just, can we be done now? Let's just be done now. This is going to make you a gazillion dollars, and let's be done now. Please. Thank you.
Does he actually know what the third movie would be, or is this just a marketing technique to get people excited for the third movie before the second movie and to get people into the second movie? Ooh, I need to see the second movie to make sure I'm staying up to date with this hip franchise.
This hip franchise. Who is screaming for another Cloverfield movie? Were you? You and I both like Cloverfield a lot. We might be two of the biggest fans of Cloverfield on the planet. Were we stomping up and down saying, why hasn't there been another Cloverfield movie? No. Well, who's clamoring for this?
Who wants another Avatar movie? Nobody. But
and we may not get one, but yeah.
We're going to get one. Those damn Alvin and the Chipmunks, who keeps asking for those sequels, but we get them.
That's very true. That's the best point of all. But that's my favorite, where they fucking put it up against Star Wars, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
How dumb.
If I were a movie studio, I would not fucking release anything opposite Star Wars. I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that's just... I mean, even if you think a good 25% of people aren't going to see Star Wars, do you think those 25% of people are going to brave movie theaters on the Star Wars opening weekend? I mean, they're 25% who don't want to see Star Wars, but they're not stupid. I mean, come on. You know who's still decimating at the box office, by the way, is Deadpool.
Deadpool. Yeah. Over 500 million worldwide.
Yeah, Deadpool stomped the two movies opening this past weekend, which were Gods of Egypt and Eddie Eagle, something like that.
Eddie the Eagle? Oh, I wanted to see that.
Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, human achievement. I wanted to see it.
So Deadpool beat Wolverine then?
You could say that, yes.
Deadpool might win all the way to Batman versus Superman.
That'd be interesting.
Superman. But it could be up there.
Coming this weekend is Zootopia.
Oh, that's true. So. Kids. Kids.
Yeah. And Daniel. Kids and Daniel.
Let's talk about superheroes, though. So I linked to this.
I promised
here.
I won't molest you. Yes.
That explains your Star Wars love. Anyway, So I linked to the trailer here for Daredevil Season 2, Part 2. Did either of you watch this trailer?
Yes.
Was it the one that I sent you about with the Punisher?
No, this is Part 2. That was Part 1.
No, I haven't seen Part 2 then. The part one, the one that I sent you guys, I mean, it was pretty intriguing.
Part 1 was okay. Part 2 sucked.
Yeah, one, Part 2 was all about Elektra.
Did I? Right. Did I have like a complete blackout moment from season one of Daredevil? Do we know who Elektra is?
No.
Was she part of season one?
No, but they're marketing it for the comic book nerds who know who she is.
Yeah. Well, and if you don't know, then that inspires the question. Who is she? Why should we care?
No, it didn't inspire that question in me. It made me think, am I supposed to know who this is? Because they're not introducing her like a normal character. They're introducing her as like a reoccurring character. And I was wildly confused. It took me forever, and I was like, what the fuck is the Yakuza? And I just, I was totally lost.
The Yakuza is the Japanese mafia.
Yeah, it took me a minute, though.
But,
I just really like the conflict that was presented between the Punisher and Daredevil, so I'm definitely going to watch. I think it's going to be really, really thematically strong for me.
Maybe that part will, but the part with Elektra, the reason Daniel they're doing it as recurring and like she just comes back is they're assuming the people watching this have intimate knowledge of Daredevil and Elektra, especially because they did those movies with Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner. So they're assuming it's just sort of in the zeitgeist, if you will.
Those hit movies that everyone owns on DVD, like who the fuck saw those movies?
I'm not supporting them, I'm just putting their argument forward, but, you know, if we're going to talk about movies on DVDs, I think we have a huge reason to be excited here. Did you see, and of course you did, because it's in the outline, and I'm assuming you did prep, that Batman vs. Superman is going to get an R-rated release for Blu-ray and DVD?
Is Deadpool going to be in it?
Yeah. No, but vintage-style Snyder violence will be in it, and that's what I'm most excited about. I mean, two of his best movies, 300 and Watchmen, rated R.
Yeah. Yes, he has the widest palette when he's rated R. He can bring the most depth to the story with an R rating. So I think that'll be good. I'm excited about that. I don't think that will be a negative thing at all.
All it means is it's just going to be boobs. That doesn't do anything for me. What I liked about Watchmen was you got to see a little peen.
It was a big blue peen, wasn't it? I don't...
Big blue peen, oh yes.
Yeah, there was nothing little about that peen.
Oh, there was.
Yeah.
Goodness. Which just does prove my theory. You just proved my theory, Elliot, that anyone who's complaining about watching the penis the whole time rather than the movie has some latent homosexuality to them.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I don't think Elliot's is all that latent. Just going to put that out there.
Yeah, but he doesn't complain about it.
Okay.
Oh, no,
I don't.
I complain about the boobage. Because you know, like, when you see, like, the R rating and this is, oh, you know, graphic violence and nudity, you just know 9 times out of 10 it's either going to be boobs or it's going to be Billy Bob Thornton's ass. You know? It's one of those two. It's nothing for me.
We need an ass double. Get Billy Bob Thornton in here.
That's how he makes all of his money recently, because he's not acting. Ass double Billy Bob Thornton.
Aren't they doing Bad Santa too?
Oh, jeez. Again, where are the clamoring throngs for Bad Santa 2? Where are the Santa Lives Matter protesters? Oh. That's weird.
So speaking of things that also possibly don't make sense, did you see that UCLA was not going to be outdone by USC, and they released a story about how white Hollywood is as well, and their story is that apparently movies that are more diverse actually make more money. The best performing group, movies in which half the main cast was non-white, had a median ticket revenue of $122.2 million. That's more than double the $56.2 million median haul for films with no non-white actors in the top eight. Films where more than half the actors in the main cast were non-white also had a median of just $52.4
million. Okay.
Do you think this proves anything?
No.
No.
So they haven't identified a trend?
No, I mean, it just says nothing about the content of the movies. It says nothing about the popularity of the franchises. It says nothing about the actors and actresses themselves who bring in money. Like, I don't go to the theater to see half Hispanic, half white people on the screen. I don't look at a movie and say, oh, I can't go see this because there isn't someone who looks like me. I will go to a movie if I think it's going to be entertaining.
Isn't the only time people search for race in relation to their movies porn?
Yes. Porn and the Ku Klux Klan, I suspect, probably does it a little, but porn is an interesting thought. I just don't get this. I don't get the need to see me on the screen. In fact, I don't want to see me on the screen. I want to see interesting people. I want to see great people. I don't care who they are, honestly, or in terms of race, I mean. I don't care what their gender is. It's so foreign to me that we think this way. It's like I'm reliving the 60s. Why are we reliving the 60s? The 60s are over. Let's get over this shit.
Okay, well then let's move on to an interesting article that I found. It's on Roger Ebert's site. It's by the editor-in-chief of his site, Matt Zoller Seitz, which isn't confusing when I keep saying the word site. That's not confusing at all. But it's called Why Leo Winning an Oscar for The Revenant, which he did, would be bad for acting. So I want to open this question up. What'd you say, Daniel?
To which it is, yes.
All right. Okay, well, you've already taken your stance. Let's see what this what Seitz had to say here, and then you can state your case, whether you agree or disagree with his reasoning. So I'm going to read the first paragraph here. Acting is not an endurance test, though you wouldn't know it from the yearly crop of Best Actor nominees. A win for Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant would only ratify the tendency to see acting greatness in terms of transformation and misery. In this value system, viewers' remarks along the lines of, I barely recognized him, and, my God, look at how much weight he lost, and, was that really him falling off that cliff? Take the place of more nuanced evaluations of the actor's art. Acting becomes a stoic's routine, a form of monk-like self-flagellation to prove devotion to one's craft. Lose that weight. Eat that flesh. Take that punch to the face. Are you man enough? That's the end of the paragraph. And I want to preface this discussion in asking, is Seitz grasping at a critique of naturalism in acting?
It sounds that way, yeah.
Certainly has that elements to it. Probably if you presented him explicitly with those ideas, he would not say that that's what he's getting at, but I think that's what he's intuitively or inductively getting at. That's what he's formulating without those concepts. And I think he's right. I don't think what Leonardo DiCaprio does in The Revenant, which I've only seen clips of because I will refuse to watch basically torture porn movie set in the 1800s. I don't think that's great acting. I think that's torture, literally. Like, we're just watching someone torture themselves on screen. That is not acting. It's not art. It's garbage.
It reminds me a lot of what Penn Jillette writes about in his book, God No. He talks a lot about magic, about how magicians, you know, he talks a lot about, I think it was David Blaine, you know, how he lived in like a box for like a week, didn't even go, like he had to go to the bathroom in the box or anything, and how that's not magic. How the truth is, I mean, magic tricks, you know, the audience knows that it's a magic trick, and that's what it's based on. That's the premise of doing a good show, of being a good magician. To say that you're actually doing something, there's no magic in that. There's no trick in that. And it drives Penn Jillette crazy, these stunt magicians who aren't actually magicians. This makes me think of that in a way. You know, it makes me think, like, when you go to a theater, you know you are going to watch a performance. Why would you go to see someone not act? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point, Elliot, and I want to build on that by throwing a question back at you guys. And the question is, where is the line? Because acting has certainly got a lot better from the time of early movies. You watch early Hollywood movies, and the acting, I would say, is not as good. It's more theater-esque acting. And I think that you need a different type of acting for movies. But I am by no means an acting expert. So what I want to know is, where's the line between the improvement from old-style acting, the theater-style acting, and when did that line cross and it becomes more naturalistic acting?
My best answer at this, without being a professional actor or studying the art of acting, is that quintessential film acting, because of the ability to isolate someone's face, for instance, as opposed to stage acting where you're sitting apart and sometimes it's difficult to see their face, the difference would be nuance. In film, good acting is presenting nuance. When I watch actors, Justin and I got to sit in on some auditions for a sort of silly show that a friend of ours was casting for. And what blew me away about the actors...
I did casting for a show I did.
Well, I didn't get to sit in on that. Did you hear the first part, Justin?
I sent you tapes.
I didn't get to... There were tapes, and they were far away. I didn't get to sit on them. Justin? Yes, and, motherfucker.
I was just plugging my show, man.
How does zombie.com? What I was blown away by is you could bring in actor after actor after actor to read the exact same lines. And there was such nuanced difference between them, except the nuance fundamentally changed the way the words were impactful, the way the words impacted me is what I should say.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about, so the casting wasn't about, is this actor a good actor, a bad actor? Can this actor bring a nuance to this part that portrays exactly what I'm looking for? So to put this in the modern context, I thought the acting in Les Mis, so think about Anne Hathaway in Les Mis, who is playing a, you know, quote unquote, what you would say a modern naturalistic part. I think she's like a girl sold into prostitution, right, Elliot?
Fantine?
She
gets into prostitution because she's trying to provide a life for her daughter. Who is being raised in an inn by innkeepers.
Right. Now, Les Mis isn't a modern story by any means, but if this was portrayed in a modern naturalistic way, it would be played up in so many horrific ways. But the acting she does in her scenes, especially the first song she sings, where we're basically looking at her face for 5 minutes, uncut, no cuts whatsoever, is unbelievable to me. It is heart-wrenching, it's uplifting, it's happy, it's depressingly sad. It is so many emotions over that 5 minutes that she can portray with her face. That is quintessential acting. Now, if there was someone underneath there stabbing her with a knife during the sad parts and shooting her up with endorphins during the happy parts, that would not be acting. That's response to stimuli. That is what we're fucking watching with Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant. We're not watching acting. We're watching torture.
I think that's a good way to... I think that's a perfect way to phrase it. Acting... Because I did acting in high school, you know? And I have a lot of friends who still act to this day, either for Disney or for film, television, stage. And the number one thing that... one of my favorite things that an acting teacher that I never got a chance to work with, but he was a good friend of mine. And he told me that acting is communication. If you're on stage, how you do it is going to be different from how you do it on film. But your job is to communicate. You're communicating a concept. You're communicating an idea. You're communicating an emotion. You're communicating something to the audience, to the viewer. In theater, it's a little bit more aural, not oral, but aural. You hear it more than you're watching. So your movements there are going to be a little bit bigger. Your words are going to be a little bit more enunciated. It's going to be a little bit more theatrical because that's what that venue calls for. Whereas in film, like as Daniel says, there is nuance. There has to be because it's visual. It's not about what you hear, but it's about what you see. But no matter what venue you're in, you need to be communicating whatever it is that the author, the playwright, the screenwriter wants to communicate. And this speaks to why naturalism is such a disaster for the arts, because naturalism at its core is not about the communication of ideas. It's not really. It's about the communication of setting, or the communication of a lack of ideas, of certain premises that hold man as being enslaved to his environment. That's why those kinds of films are just, no matter how technically proficient the actor might be, that's not acting. You know, because they're not really communicating ideas the way that it would be in a romantic film or under romantic directing.
Well, naturalism's not trying to communicate at all. It's just trying to be.
Yeah, just to be a documentary, as if you could create a fictional documentary and have it. I mean, it's just the wrong approach to the It's the wrong approach to the arts. It really is, because the idea that you're going to create something while at the same time not understanding that what you are creating, it is not what art is supposed to be. I can't really explain it really very well, but I think you guys pick up what I'm putting down.
Yeah. Excellent.
Any follow-up thoughts, Daniel?
No, not at all.
I think that about sums it up then. Let's move on to people who are maybe focused on communication. We're not really sure. It's time for Reddit on Reddit. Sony, stupid, Xbox, lame, PC, gaming all the way. EA blows, Steam rocks, got Res for my Firefox. See, these things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. What is a myth that you wish people would stop repeating?
Oh, Jesus. Donald Trump is an electable candidate?
Rape culture?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's some specific things that I think. You know, there's obviously like the, we only use 10% of our brain.
Yep.
No, that's horrifically stupid. Don't say that anymore, please. What's the, the one that is perpetuated by movies all the time is like, if you ask a police officer if they're a police officer, they have to tell you they're a police officer.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the stupidest fucking thing ever. That is not a rule. Everyone, do not think that it applies to you in your real life.
Or do, and then tell us what happens.
Islam is a religion of peace. Like people to stop thinking that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you, Bosch Foss.
Ashley Graham is attractive.
Yes. I've got one. I really, really don't like people keep perpetuating this. So, and this is something I was taught in fourth grade, actually, is that, your tongue has different areas that taste different flavors. Not true. Your tongue tastes all the flavors all over. And in fact, bitter, sour, salty, and sweet are four of the five flavors. By the way, the fifth is umami, which is like savory or meaty. So.
Umami burger is neither savory or meaty.
I don't think I've ever been to an umami burger.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
I think my
Justin.
Who's going next?
Go.
All right. I did just watch a video recently from that Adam Ruins Everything show. They talk about how a lot of people have the idea that the hymen, a woman's hymen, is like a big, like piece of like paper or something, like in a football game where the football team runs through it and ruptures it. But it's actually not like that. That it's actually possible to not be a virgin and to still have an intact hymen. That in fact, sex is not supposed to hurt on the first time for a woman. So that really kind of blew my mind.
The gay guy brings up the hymen issue?
Really? Didn't he just Adam Carolla us? He already did this on another episode, didn't he?
Oh, did he? I don't know.
If not, I'm having major deja vu, which I don't know what the hell is going on, so.
Yeah, weird. I don't know. If, by the way, just do you have a specific one before I make another point?
No, you're good. You guys are covering it, so.
Okay. There's actually a fantastic Wikipedia entry called List of Common Misconceptions. It's literally just, you just scroll forever, list of things that we typically believe that are absolutely not true. For instance, Henry Ford did not invent either the automobile or the assembly line. He did improve the assembly line process substantially, sometimes through his own engineering, but more often through sponsoring the work of his employees. Carl Benz is credited with the invention of the first automobile, and the assembly line existed throughout history. So, also, Thomas Crapper did not invent the flushing toilet.
That's unfortunate. Next, Reddit. This is a shower thought from the Shower Thoughts subreddit. Most people will gladly store their useless junk in their garage and leave their $20,000 car outside. And I included this because there is a parking problem at my apartment complex, that there's never free parking spots, but then you go around and when people open their garage, it's filled with, as they say, useless crap. Have you guys noticed this as well?
Yeah, because I'm living proof of that. My garage is full of stuff, but like my beautiful Ford Fusion sits outside.
Yeah, I don't. So there's a couple things about this. One is there's a reason, right? So like your car has a security system built in the sense that it locks. And without breaking it, someone couldn't take it. Whereas if you stored your useless crap outside, someone could just take it. It's not, it doesn't have a security system. But it kind of makes sense, right? Now, if you have a very expensive car, like a super expensive car, and it's very nice, or if it's very new, you probably should keep it in a garage, but.
Your Mercedes.
Most people. Yeah, I mean, I'm driving around something I bought in 2007. Like, that shit's staying outside. And I'm keeping my pop vinyls in a garage, but.
So you think that they're not pointing out anything bad?
Not really. I mean, I think it makes sense. I mean, it's a shower thought, right? So sometimes it's just like, oh yeah, why does that thing happen? Yes, shower. Soap. But I don't think it's something profound like, holy shit, I'm gonna change civilization because people are gonna start putting their car in a garage.
Alright. Next Reddit. And I put this one in here for you, Daniel, because you said, I want something from the mildly interesting subreddit. Do you remember that?
Yes. I can't wait to be mildly interested.
So what we have here, and I'm actually more than mildly interested in this, what we have here is a picture of a shower that has an exact temperature meter. And this is interesting for me because why aren't there more showers like this? Why isn't this the convention for showers?
Well, this is something that I think appeals to a certain mindset, but isn't actually useful in reality.
How dare you?
All that much.
How dare you?
I don't think it is. When you think about the design of things, I don't necessarily need to say I want my shower to be exactly 88 degrees or 92 degrees. Could you tell the difference between a 92 degree shower and a 93 degree shower?
Yes.
Or even a 94 degree shower?
You ever been in a hot tub?
You couldn't. I'm talking about a shower, not a hot tub.
When my balls start to burn, it's too hot.
It's a something where you don't necessarily need matters of degree. You just need general, this is going to be the coldest, this is going to be the hottest, I want something that's 3/4 of the way there. And that's fine for people and functionality. I think this appeals to people more than it is useful for people.
I don't know what you're talking
about. I just shit on every Reddit that you gave us this week.
Yep.
I just laid it down on the ground and did a Danny Thomas.
That's all right.
All over it.
You're the spirit of a Redditor lives in you.
Yes. Take that, Reddit. All of your shit is terrible.
All right. I
hate it.
On that
Although
note,
this was mildly interesting, so I do appreciate that.
Yeah, you asked for it and you got it. All right. What did we learn this week, Daniel?
Well, I learned that millennials are horrible for many reasons, but maybe not necessarily because they've disavowed cereal. It's probably mostly because we call them millennials. And I think that word, that's the Ted Cruz of words, right? It just makes you want to punch them in the face just because it is. Yeah.
Elliot?
I learned that Punta Cana is going to be very nice in the time of year when the elections are going on. So if Donald Trump does in fact become commander in chief, Adios. Hasta luego.
Generalissimo Trump. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I'm going to start storing my car outside and put more shit in my garage. Quarters, here I come.
The Funkos.
Yeah, renovate it. Go to IKEA, put up shelves, and make it a den.
That's right. Here, rent it out. Use the extra income, right?
Yeah!
I'll live in it and just Airbnb my apartment.
Airbnb the garage! There are some poor Mexicans who need a place to stay. I can say that because I'm half Hispanic. If you learned something this week, why don't you tell us on iTunes? Go there, give us a 5-star review, and leave us a nice little note. People are so pleasant with their notes. We love them. And then if you really learned something, tell us about it. Tell us about it. Tell us about it. Facebook. So facebook.com/themidside or twitter.com/themidside. We need more tweets from people. People like Mark. Mark W. Where are you with the tweets, man? We need more tweets from you.
Yeah, we love you, Mark.
We need some tweets.
Yes.
Absolutely. And then, of course, there's the Patreon fans. My goodness. We could not do this show without you. That is actually a lie. We absolutely could do this show without you, but it would be much less profitable.
Yeah, I would actually literally lose money, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. In fact, we don't lose money on the show now, I think. Justin doesn't lose money because I don't pay for shit. thank you so much. And if you want to contribute to that, you can go to patreon.com/themidside and you can choose to give us real money, real Trump dollars every time we put out a piece of content that helps us pay for things like hosting and marketing and getting the word out and giving you the commentary that you so desire every week. So we really appreciate it. We're going to release a Snyder series soon. That's right, a new one on Man of Steel. So be on the lookout for that right around the time Batman vs. Superman premieres. And then, of course, we will do our Snyder series on that after we've had time to.
It'll either be next week or the week after because we want to give you some lead time to watch Man of Steel and listen to our episode before Batman vs. Superman.
That's right, motherfuckers. Right. It's going to be epic.
Hello.
Absolutely epic. It's really, I mean, we've already recorded it. It's in the can. And we're going to take it out of the can, and we're going to give it to you, and it's going to be a giant fucking can of whoop-ass, because it's amazing.
That you can listen to while you're on the can.
Yes! Can, it's a can, in fact.
You can do it!
So, thanks so much, folks. Tell a friend. We love you, and we'll talk to you next week.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!